Soccer Talk podcast, the only podcast that focuses on watching soccer on TV, online and apps. Coming up on this week's show, ESPN scores their most watched playoff game for Major League Soccer since 2014. PlayStation View bites the dust. Our thoughts on the NBC Premier League Fan Fest. Could the Bundesliga benefit from Disney Plus? And of course, we have letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. My name is Christopher Harris, and I am joined by my co-host, Kartik Krishnayar. Kartik, since this last podcast that we did last week, it's been an eventful weekend, or basically 7 days of football watching. Lots of highs, not a lot of lows. My match of the week from this past week, it's a toss-up. It's a toss-up between Liverpool and Spurs, which to me is one of the best Premier League matches I've watched in a long, long time. From start to finish, it was full-on entertaining. It was non-stop, and there didn't seem to be any like down moments in that match. It was just a joy to watch. It reminded me of old classic Premier League matches that I'd be watching on, I don't know, Fox Sports World back in the 2000s, like late at night. It was a really good game. The other match that I would say is a toss-up between that and this one is LAFC against LA Galaxy. And we talked about this one on last week's podcast. I think I mentioned something, just kind of saying like, oh, it's going to be a 4-4 or something like that. Little did I know it ended up being a 5-3 game. Defending was pretty bad on both sides. It was actually very bad on both sides. But as with Major League Soccer, sometimes, they don't seem to care too much about defending. Similar to the Premier League in many ways, though, too. But it was a really, really entertaining game with a fantastic atmosphere. And that's something that with Major League Soccer, we're missing out usually. But this one was, this atmosphere at the LAFC can rival some of the best teams in England or Germany. It was that good. And I really enjoyed watching the game. It was a joy to watch. What about you, Kartik?
Well, I didn't see the match, so... But I heard all about it from folks, and it seemed to have been a very entertaining match. I think the MLS playoffs have been entertaining. That's a reflection of a league that has a salary cap and puts all its money into attacking players, right? So there is a huge gap between the level of attacker and the level of defender in MLS, and it's something that's been growing through a number of years. Mm-hmm. But that's the reality, is that that there are entertaining matches, and I say this over and over again. I'm actually saying this again there was a website that's doing an interview with me this week, giving people a little bit of a preview that Americans constantly confuse quality for entertainment. So MLS, very entertaining. I don't know if the quality is that high. And I've made that for those of you who say I'm piling on MLS, I say that about the Premier League all the time. Mm-hmm. If you want to be selective in what you hear or what you read, that I say that about the Premier League, that a lot of American fans of the Premier League confuse high scoring matches with being with quality, whereas give me the 1-0 Serie A game sometimes. I think that's more quality.
Right. It's interesting though too, Kartik, because with this match, 5-3, it could end up being the most exciting game of the whole MLS Cup playoffs or final this year, and it could end up being what could have been a great final. But that's the thing with Major League Soccer, in terms of you have the Western Conference and you have the Eastern Conference, and it's especially this season with the Eastern Conference teams not being that strong. This would have been a great final to have. Two teams from the Western Conference in the final. Instead, we're recording this podcast before we know the results of a lot of these Major League Soccer games in terms of the next round of playoffs. But that'd be great. The other thing, too, about this match was that Major League Soccer prides itself upon portraying a squeaky clean image. But there were two incidents in this match towards the very end that I thought were great. These are talkative moments. These are water cooler moments. These are things that after the game, if you were in a bar or the next day at work, you'd say, hey, oh my gosh, did you see what happened last night? The first one was Sebastian Salazar from ESPN, fantastic interviewer, and post-match asking Bob Bradley about Carlos Vela, asking him whether or not he rises for those big games. And Bob Bradley returned with a get lost, And he stormed off, and he turned around, and he said, "Get lost," again and again. And it was a really heated moment, and it's great to watch and see that, because oftentimes things are so scripted with media training and so blah interviews. But this one was a really great question by Sebastian. I thought a thought-provoking question that elicited a really emotional response. That was great television. And the second thing was Zlatan walking off the field and getting abused by LAFC fans, and just Zlatan in his own way just grabbing his crotch and just sending a message to the LAFC supporters. But that, to me, is something that the Premier League, it's almost like a soap opera. The things that happen off the pitch in the Premier League sometimes are more exciting than what happens on the pitch sometimes. It's not always that case, but that's part of the charisma and part of the attachment that a lot of people have to the Premier League, are those things that happen off the pitch, whether it's a scandal or with the Championship, which is a different division, of course, but Spygate or things like that, where it's like, oh my gosh, there's so much on the line that, I mean, these things happen. People even lose their minds sometimes and do crazy things. But all in all, it was a good week for Major League Soccer. We'll get into the TV ratings a little bit later. But I am concerned that this might have been a great final, and beyond this, it might be pretty stale. And I mean, we might see an LAFC Atlanta final, and it's going to be pretty boring until the final, and then we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I think this also, I hope, can help defeat the narrative that has been floated by a lot of haters of MLS and US soccer, that somehow Bob Bradley and Bruce Arena are company men. Because they're not.
Yeah.
Those people who say Arena is like an MLS shill and a U.S. soccer shill have no idea the things he said through the years about Major League Soccer as an employee and a coach in Major League Soccer. And same thing for Bob Bradley. I mean, nobody – I mean, Jurgen Klinsmann gets a lot of credit from the anti-MLS crowd for being a critic of MLS and U.S. soccer, which I think he was when he wanted to be, when he wanted to – I mean, he made some very valid criticisms, but I think he did a lot of it strategically in order to take the pressure off of himself. I will tell you, just from my own reporting, nobody internally in the last 15 years in U.S. soccer has been more critical and pushed for more changes internally than Bob Bradley. So I'm glad the public that has adopted this narrative of him, or the anti-whatever public, saw that he can get really animated and defensive of his player in Carlos Vela, and not read from the MLS script in that case. And I thought it was great. I also thought Seb Salazar, as always, was fantastic. When I said I didn't see the match, I did see that. And I saw Zlatan also. Of course, I saw those clips. So
yeah, which goes to show, Kartik, even if you missed the match, those moments are viral and are posted on social media. And those are sometimes the talking points more so than the goals themselves.
Yeah, and I think that's something that MLS maybe will learn from going forward, that this was the most talked about MLS match in some time. Now, I think it's important as we get into this week to see if this momentum continues. Obviously, having Seattle and LAFC, which is already turning into a little bit of a rivalry in one of the matches, is good. Again, we're recording this before these matches are played. Toronto and Atlanta have been superior clubs lately, but is there going to be the kind of widespread interest and people talking about this stuff outside of the MLS bubble? Let's see. I'm hopeful, but I'm not confident.
So speaking of widespread interest, Kartik, this past weekend I was listening to a radio commentary because I was driving from Jacksonville to Tampa, and it was on a Saturday afternoon, and I thought, okay, let me turn on Talk Sport and listen to the Premier League coverage that they have, which is actually a good service, because even if you are driving or you can't be in front of the TV screen, Talk Sport does a good job of providing commentary. The bad news is the commentary is not that good. But the access, which is true, the access to that commentary is fantastic. I mean, just as one example in this commentary of this match, and it's definitely B-level or C-level commentators. One of the commentators, whoever it was, called Christian Pulisic America's greatest export since Coca-Cola, which some of this stuff you just have to laugh at. The other interesting thing I thought, too, is that there are definitely the commentators, which is, they do a great job in terms of Premier League Live, encouraging people to tweet in messages or send in questions or let the radio commentators know where you're watching this match and what's happening in your life. And actually in this match too, the commentators gravitate a lot to the American audience, so that they know that this those commentaries are going, I'm not sure how many countries around the world, but a lot of it is very US focused. A lot of the people sending in tweets and messages are from the US, and I'm sure TalkSport knows how popular the Premier League is in the United States. But it was kind of funny listening to that, and then the commentary was really bad, but still, in terms of being able to listen and hear Pulisic scoring the hat-trick, which is fantastic news. This is exactly what we wanted and needed him to be doing, is to, when, you know, in that pressure cooker situation, is you have to play week in, week out as best as you can. The competition level is immense, and this will hopefully improve Pulisic's game in the long run, rather than playing in some leagues where he's the first person on the team sheet. So that was my experience with watching Burnley against Chelsea. I didn't watch it, listened to it. It's not as good as BBC radio commentaries, but it's better than nothing. And then on Sunday morning, Kartik, I watched Swansea City against Cardiff City in the South Wales Derby. Speaking of a TalkSport commentator, we had Sam Matterface doing the commentary in this one worldwide. And in this match, Kartik, of course, for those listeners who don't know, Swansea City won this one 1-0. And by the scoreline, you would think it was a close match. It was a pretty comfortable win. I was just surprised at how poor Cardiff City was in this game. But still, a huge victory. For Swansea, it's almost like winning the league. The scenes at the end in terms of the fans, the coach, everything. Everyone's ecstatic. It's like a Liverpool Everton or a Real Madrid against Barcelona. It's that at that level within Wales in terms of what this game means for both teams. Now the fan fest, Kartik. So I was traveling a lot this weekend. I did watch Liverpool against Spurs and some of the other games too. I think I was in and out of some of the other matches. The fan fest, I think if I remember correctly, you're not a big fan of it.
No.
But what I would say, though, to Kartik is that, and I know a lot of listeners, too, are not fans of it. Some are huge fans of it. I enjoy it just because it's something different. It mixes things up a little bit. And what I take from it is that NBC Sports has created a culture on television where most of the viewers care about the talent. Like, so we care what Rebecca Lowe is going to say. Or the two Robbies, or Kyle, we will listen more intently. We have a empathy. We have an interest in what they say and what they do. And the Fan Fest is a great example of that too. Everything from, I don't know, the two Robbies riding a horse or a bull on the rodeo, whatever. It's some crazy silly stuff. But it is an opportunity for fans in the Austin area, and all through kind of the Texas, etc., to come and celebrate their local club, well, their Premier League club in Austin. I enjoy it for the weekend that it is. And by the way, Kartik, it's coming to Miami in December, so get ready. But I don't know. So to me, it's once in a while. It's different, and I enjoy watching it. I'm not going to watch every minute of it, but I think it's an interesting celebration. And Kartik, what about you? Are you going to go to the Fan Fest in Miami in December?
Well, it depends what else I'm doing. No, I may not. It depends what's happening that weekend for me. I don't know which weekend it is, but I wasn't aware it was coming to Miami until this moment. So
what about like Sean Wright Phillips? If Sean Wright Phillips came, or the GOAT, or you mean?
Yeah, no, I would for that. Yeah, and I was lucky enough to meet Sean Wright Phillips at the NPSL final, which Miami FC played in last year against FC Motown. He and his brother were both there. There were several Red Bull ties to our Miami FC team, so that prompted him to show up. But that was kind of neat. But yeah, I mean, I suppose so. I mean, I don't know though. I don't. It's to me, it's a little bit of an odd thing. I get the FanFest element, but to me, it's a little bit of an odd thing to stand out in the hot sun for all those hours. You have to be really committed to this league, which I guess there are a lot of people who are. Thousands of people in Austin turned up.
Yeah, well, that was the thing in Austin too. Actually, it was pretty cold. I think I watched some of the. I think it was Sunday morning or Saturday morning. It was chilly.
I would probably say it depends on whether the Bundesliga is on winter break by that time. That's probably going to be the determining factor for me, because if the Bundesliga is playing, I go to the FanFest. I miss those matches. Okay. If the Bundesliga is on winter break, I go to the fan. The only thing going on is the Premier League, so I might go. So that's actually, but I don't know. I know that's not a consideration for most people. I'm more of a Bundesliga fan these days than a Premier League fan.
So according to my sources, Kartik, and this has not been revealed publicly, but they're looking at December 14th and 15th. So I'm not sure where that falls in terms of the Bundesliga winter break.
That probably is before the Bundesliga. That might be the last weekend of the Bundesliga when you get your unofficial fall champion. So I don't know. It may depend on the fixtures.
Yeah.
But chances are it's a no if the Bundesliga is playing.
Okay. All right. Well,
that's just me. I know people will get very angry about that. How can you watch the Bundesliga instead of the Premier League? I get a lot of that actually every week. But yeah, I do. It depends on the matchup. That doesn't mean I watch every Bundesliga match instead of every Premier League match. I think the people who listen to the show, read our site, know that I'm kind of 50-50, but If the Premier League is the only thing that I'm able to watch on a given day, then I lose the Bundesliga. I'm not really happy about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is a very positive thing in terms of the Bundesliga. I mean, to me, soccer is more important than extracurricular activities in terms of FanFest and things like that. So you have your priorities straight. Kartik, let's move on to TV streaming news, and this one could be an interesting one.
Yeah. Moffat Nathanson estimated last week that the Disney Plus OTT bundle, which includes ESPN Plus, could hit 8 million subscribers worldwide soon after the launch and 18 million by the end of 2020. Currently, ESPN Plus has, as far as we know, 2 million subscribers. That was a little while ago that they gave us that number, but that's that would be a huge leap, and that would give exposure. We just talked about the Bundesliga, Serie A's on ESPN Plus for the most part. All of these products that are on ESPN Plus, the USL exclusively on ESPN Plus, a whole lot more exposure.
Yeah, this is an interesting one too, and I teased this one in the beginning of the show where I talked about could the Bundesliga benefit from Disney Plus, and. This might be part of a long-term strategy, Kartik, because if these numbers will pan out, and so if the Disney Plus bundle, which includes ESPN Plus, will be 8 million subscribers soon after the launch, which is going to be, I think, November 12th. So say by the end of the year, 8 million subscribers, and by the end of 2020, just a year away in a couple of months, 18 million. So at that point, You mean a lot of these people would have the Disney Plus bundle. They may watch mostly Disney Plus, and they may watch might watch some Marvel stuff, whatever. But they have ESPN Plus. That would be a good opportunity for them to kind of watch more of those programming and be introduced to the Bundesliga or Serie A. Long term, this could be a huge success for the Bundesliga. They're making a long term bet, a long term gamble that the Disney Plus bundle, which includes ESPN Plus, I mean, if it's 18 million by the end of 2020, what would it be at 2021 or 2022? It could be 25 million or 30 million. Now you're entering numbers that are far greater than beIN Sports, far greater than a lot of TV channels. And as the number of TV subscribers decreases in terms of cable and satellite, this could be the future. So it could be that the Bundesliga have made a bet on the future, saying that the streaming is the way to go. And by partnering with not only with ESPN, but also with Disney, this gives them huge opportunities to introduce the league to a whole brand new audience. It could work. We'll have to wait and see. Now, next up, Kartik, is that, and actually this is breaking news as of Tuesday. So by the time most listeners are hearing this, they might have already heard about this news. But Sony has decided to go ahead and shut down PlayStation View, which is their streaming service. The last day that it's going to be running is January 30th, 2020, so just a couple months away. Sony was trying to find a buyer to basically kind of bail out PlayStation View or buy out PlayStation View. They were unable to find a buyer. Now the rumors are that FuboTV might be interested in trying to acquire the customers. So even though the service will be dead as of January 30th from PlayStation View, they do have a large number of subscribers and those customers, and that would be a good way to take them and carry them over to whether it's FuboTV or another streaming service. But my take of this, Kartik, is that, I mean, it's been 5 years since PlayStation View launched. For most of those 5 years, PlayStation View was the best streaming service out there. It was expensive, yes, but it had almost every single channel for a large part of the time. And it had multi-view, so you could watch many different programs at the same time. It had a great DVR. The biggest issue it had was its name. When you mentioned PlayStation View, people would say, I don't have a PlayStation, I have an Xbox, or I don't have a video game system. And the reality is that you didn't need to have a PlayStation View. All you needed was a Roku or a Chromecast or a laptop or a phone or anything, basically, to run a PlayStation View. But Sony stubbornly refused to change the name. A lot of people were saying, the customer saying, change the name to Sony View. Just take out the word PlayStation. It confuses people. Yes, you can play PlayStation View on a PlayStation, but you can also play it on different devices too. And ultimately, I believe that was the main reason that PlayStation View did not succeed. In a competitive marketplace where the name itself is confusing, that's the first stumbling block. That's the first thing that people kind of run into. And for most of the people, I think most people would say, I'm not interested. I want to get Sling TV, which is a name that doesn't really mean anything. Or I want to get YouTube TV. And that can be a little bit confusing too. But PlayStation View, as of January 30th, is no more. And I'm sad to see it go, because it was actually a very good service. And Kartik, last but not least, more news about DAZN.
Yeah, who have been advertising like crazy of late. DAZN seeks to raise at least $500 million for expansion and a rights push. They are making every effort now to acquire new properties and to promote the properties they have. It's difficult to watch television without seeing a DAZN ad these days. So they're really pushing, and we knew they were serious when they launched, but now let's see if they can actually translate that into some rights beyond what they have in the U.S. market. Obviously, in some overseas markets, they picked up some more lucrative things than they have here.
Yeah, and this trying to raise another $500 million to go ahead and get more rights. It's a gamble, because there's no guarantee that DAZN's business model is going to work or is working. What they focus on so far, they focused on mostly annual subscriptions. So if you want to get UFC or if you want to get MMA, a lot of the subscription packages are annual, or they have some, the cheapest one they have is, I think, $20 a month. They have no free trials available, so it is a very much... now, for those MMA and UFC and kind of the fighting types of sports, that may work really well. It's basically a replacement for pay-per-view. Now, for soccer and other sports, and we know that they're interested in the NFL, there's no guarantee that that's going to work in the United States, especially with such a competitive marketplace, and we just saw that PlayStation View is going out of business. So it's a risky gamble. I mean, $500 million trying to raise that amount of funds. Obviously, they're enthusiastic that they can make it happen. There's a lot of executives at DAZN, actually the two top executives. One is John Skipper, the former head of ESPN. And then the other one is Jamie Horowitz, who's from Fox Sports. He's the guy that changed FS1 into all talk and tried to copy the ESPN model. And largely, you could say that largely that failed for the most part, in terms of it wasn't the success that they thought it would be. But those guys are at DAZN, so maybe they'll make that a success or not. We'll see. TV ratings, Kartik. And actually, we didn't mention this one yet, so let's talk about this one too. We skipped over it. North Carolina Courage against Chicago Red Stars, the NWSL final. What was the game like? What was the coverage like? And let's talk about the viewership number two.
Yeah. So it was one of the few games, one of two matches I watched this week. I had my Miami FC match, which ended up spending 12 hours there setting up and everything, and that was a great match. It ended at 3-2. But those of you that aren't on MyKudru probably did not see that match. But I watched this match, and I watched the Schalke-Dortmund match earlier on Saturday. This match, the coverage was really good from ESPN. So it was Jen Hildreth, Ali Wagner in the booth. They had two on-pitch reporters. They had a really good halftime presentation. They talked to Amanda Duffy, the NWSL president, and had some really good discussions about the league, Louisville expansion, etc. It felt a little propaganda-ish. I wouldn't deny that, but the match was good. Very, very good. Focused on shutting down Sam Kerr, and there was a lot of conversation that they picked up from the coaches and had a lot of discussion on how North Carolina tactically was trying to shut down Sam Kerr and what they were doing going forward, and how Sam Mewis's role, how important that was. So a lot of tactical discussion. Of course, Jen Hildreth and Ali Wagner are both people we like a lot in their calls of this sport. So no surprise, they were very, very good as a pair, and they've done some games throughout the NWSL playoffs together. They used to do the Lifetime games together also. So they have a good pairing. I was really happy with the coverage. I love the match. North Carolina has won another title, so that's three successive years, or four successive years if you include their former incarnation as Western New York, that they've been in the final, and they've won three of those. So certainly a dominant team, and I think this is an important thing for fans to understand, Chris. So many of their key players are not critical members of the U.S. women's national team. So Lynn Williams is a star for them. She never seems to get called into the national team. Jaylene Hinkle's been controversial, so she's not in the national team. Sam Mewis, of course, now stood out in the World Cup, but prior to that was kind of on the fringe, in and out of the team. And then Jessica McDonald is someone that got called in for the World Cup, but has generally not been a key player for the national team and didn't play much this summer. So it's a team that's maybe punching above their weight in the minds of a lot of people, but they've been right there for four successive years in the final. So hats off to them, and great coverage from ESPN. Oh, and by the way, this was on ESPN, not on ESPN2. That was also very surprising to me.
Yeah, and actually the viewing number, in terms of what social media said, I think they were kind of down on this number. But to me, actually, I'm up on this number. It was 166,000 people that tuned into this. Yes, it's not U.S. women's national team numbers by any means, but it's greater than what the NYCFC Toronto game was last week on FS1, the playoff. It's almost as great as the Seattle against Real Salt Lake game, which is 3,000 people more. Last week also another playoff game. So for a league that's still finding its feet, NWSL compared to MLS, it's been around a long time, I think that's a decent number. There's something to basically build upon, and who knows, maybe next season there'll be more coverage, maybe on ESPN+ and other places, but it's positive to me. In terms of some of the other numbers that we saw from this past week, the LAFC, LA Galaxy one, that's really the one that stands out for me. And that was, it was a game, and this is typical Major League Soccer, it's not their fault, but it's frustrating, is that the game was advertised on ESPN, tune into ESPN, and the game's not on, it's college football. So you have to tune into ESPN2 to watch it. And then for about 30 minutes of the game, it was on ESPN2. And then suddenly, it goes to a commercial. I'm like, what the heck just happened there? And then so I figured out, okay, it's switched now to ESPN. So go to ESPN and it's there. And I watched the rest of the game and I enjoyed it. So the number for ESPN, ESPN2, and ESPN Deportes, the combined number, the viewing average was 871,000. It's the most watched MLS Cup playoff on ESPN since 2014. It's the most watched Major League Soccer game ever. in Spanish language on ESPN Deportes. Some great numbers. And again, too, this is the, to me, this is the type of match I'd love to see more of. If Major League Soccer could have more of these types of games, I think that would draw in even the hardcore audience to Major League Soccer. Hopefully this is not a rarity, but anyway, I enjoyed that one. The biggest number of the week that I've seen so far is Liverpool against Spurs on NBC. And this one had 915,000 viewers on NBC. We're still waiting for the Telemundo number. Okay, so moving on to listener mailbag. First up is Curtis Williams. And Curtis says, I have been a fan of Liga MX since Apertura 2001 on Univision. And Sunday after Sunday, I've become an informed fan of the league, with Pumas, Chivas, and Santos being my favorite teams. I often wonder, however, how the matches would sound in English. That would depend on whom the broadcasters are, of course. ESPN2 tried that in the mid-2000s, but with little success due to the presenter's lack of Liga MX knowledge. Now it's been FS1 and FS2's turn at the wheel for the past two seasons, and I believe their coverage has improved because of one man, Adrian Garcia Marquez. His passion for the game and Liga MX expertise helps elevate the broadcasts to the viewers, along with analysts such as Rodolfo Landeros, Kobe Jones, and Mariano Trujillo. It doesn't hurt to have teams such as Cholos, Santos Laguna, Club America, and Chivas each having written content online, or in Chivas's case, broadcast home matches in English. So yes, I am hooked on Liga MX. And Curtis, this is some great feedback and great input, because I try to watch Liga MX as much as I can, and with kids and soccer practices and getting up early sometimes to go to my daughter's soccer game. Oftentimes the games are on later than Major League Soccer, so oftentimes I don't get to watch as much as I can. Some great feedback here too in terms of Fox's coverage, because even though the coverage has improved, they're not advertising it. There's no promos. If you ask 10 out of 10 soccer fans in the United States at random, I think probably 9 of them would have no idea that Fox is even broadcasting Liga MX games in English for 3 of the clubs. So so I think, even going back to ESPN, you mentioned ESPN2 tried it in the mid-2000s, and yes, the presenters didn't know Liga MX as much, but again, ESPN2 didn't promote it or advertise it either. So I think that's part of the issue. What's your take, Kartik?
Yeah, I think that's part of the issue, that they didn't promote it that much. I think another part of the issue is that the clubs that are on Fox aren't necessarily the most popular clubs. Now, although Zolos does have a following in the U.S., right?
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of American players, and obviously they're right across the border. So there's a lot of interest in that club, but there hasn't been as much promotion of it. I think there's just the culture of not necessarily watching those matches in English, not expecting those matches to be on in English, because there's more knowledge of Liga MX, I think, now among English language dominant soccer fans in the U.S. than there's ever been in the past.
Yeah.
But it used to be seen as a very ethnic thing to do, to watch that league. But I don't know. I think as time goes on, maybe it will catch on, but there's just not the culture of people watching it in English.
Yeah, and I honestly think that even the bare necessities Fox and Liga MX are not doing, in terms of just trying to do, I mean, having a TV schedule, or having letting people know ahead of time, a press release, which doesn't cost you anything. You mean letting the media know that, okay, here's a schedule for the upcoming 2 or 3 weeks, and here's which game is going to be on which channels, and those types of things. That's not even happening. The only way I find out about Liga MX games on US television, on Fox in English, is when the commentator tweets out something, and he might say, hey, I'm doing a broadcast tonight at 10 o'clock on FS2. I'm like, oh, I had no idea that that game was even going to be on. And to me, that's the bare necessity. At first, I mean, just let people know it exists. And slowly but surely, they will gravitate towards it. And then if you want to add to that and grow the game, or grow the league or the coverage, you need to advertise and get in fans' faces. Dan McCurry says, I know people harp on this constantly, but why can't US and Major League Soccer matches start at the advertised time? I skip the meaningless MLS group stage regular season and only tune in for the playoffs, only to find when I tune in that we are 20 minutes from kickoff. El Tráfico's advertised kickoff time was 7:30 Pacific time, which is already late for my time zone. How do they expect to grow the audience with late starts that actually start even later? Watershed moment for those in Pacific time coast, Pacific time. But how many people stayed up to watch this match in the central or eastern time zones? And the reality on this one, Kartik, which is a rarity, is that they got a huge number for a game that started so late. And that's my thing too. Like we often talk on this podcast about kickoff times and which times are better. A game that's 7:30 on a Saturday morning Eastern time, which is 4:30 Pacific time. How many people watch that game versus a MLS game at 3:30 on a Sunday afternoon? And my bone of contention is that if a game's good enough and has the anticipation and there's enough interest, I'll watch a game no matter what time it is. I mean, I think back to the World Cup when it was in South Korea and Japan. I'm sure like you, Kartik, I was getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning to watch games and then followed that by a 4 o'clock in the morning game and then a 6 o'clock in the morning game. I didn't get any sleep for like a month. But if the game's that important, I will stay up and watch it. Or I'll try and find any way possible to watch it, whatever it may take. What about you, Kartik? Would you do that too, or do you disagree?
I have historically agreed in terms of the 2002 World Cup, obviously, is the best example. I'm actually in that same interview I teased earlier. I'm talking about one of the great moments for me was when John O'Brien scored that goal for the U.S. against Portugal, which was, I think, at 3:05 Eastern time in the morning, something like that. But I guess as I get older and we have the DVR going, we're recording this on Tuesday night. I know we normally record the show on Thursdays. I am not sure if I'm going to watch Seattle LA. I am going to watch Seattle LA. I just don't know when I'm going to watch it. Am I going to watch it live? Am I going to watch it tomorrow after I get home from work? It's going to be one or the other. But I there's no guarantee I'll watch it live now, which 10 years ago I would have. I would have just stayed up and sucked it up. So I think the DVR changes a lot of that for us.
Yeah, and it is very much a DVR culture these days, more so than ever in terms of being able to time shift. And you could watch this game tomorrow morning and not know what the score is and try to, just to block that out or know what the score is and watch it or rewatch it. Lots of different options. All right, next up is Robert Thompson. And Robert says, hope you saw the LAFC versus LA Galaxy game last week. An exciting game, but like so many MLS games, made exciting by the great attacking play, balanced by some shoddy defensive work. Maybe after the season, you and Kartik can address the future of Major League Soccer. That is some of what will hopefully be in my email here when it gets written. Team budgets are often spent on player makers, goal scorers. There are very few defensive designated players. There is not enough money to cover 11 top-notch players, at least until they start getting more young players from their academies. And the thing about this, Kartik, too, is that while I agree with Robert, and I'm sure you do too, and we've talked about this before too, about that it'd be great to get some world-class defenders or some really decent defenders in the league to really make things a little bit more interesting in terms of matches rather than just goal fests at times. There's nothing against goals. But the other thing about this, too, is that one of the main reasons I watched this game, the LAFC, LA Galaxy game, was because of one person, and that's Zlatan. Because I want to see what he's going to do next. I have no idea how he's going to play this game before I watched it. Is he going to be the talking point of this game? Is he going to do something amazing? Is he going to karate kick a guy in the head? Or what is he going to do? And it's that sense of not knowing, one individual not knowing what he's going to do. With Zlatan, if he does leave the league, which a lot of people say that this is it for LA Galaxy and Major League Soccer, he's going to Europe or wherever, I think that's a big loss. And more so than, say, a Wayne Rooney, more so than a Steven Gerrard, than a Frank Lampard. You go down the list, there's so many different players from overseas. Zlatan had that X factor. You wanted to know what he would say post-match. You wanted to know, you mean, what he would do, or just in the, even before the game started, in the tunnel, and what he's going to do in the tunnel. Is he going to, you mean, say something to Vela in front of his face, or whatever it may be? So Major League Soccer, if they do lose Zlatan, that's a huge loss, because without Zlatan, yes, you have Carlos Vela, and you have some other players too that are decent, but I'd be less likely to watch another LAFC, LA Galaxy game if Zlatan's not there. Are you joining the Zlatan fan club, Kartik, anytime soon?
Yeah, I've been a Zlatan fan for years, so it doesn't. He'll be missed, but I think what Rooney and Zlatan have shown, and some other players recently, there's a drive among American soccer journalists, people who are very defensive of Major League Soccer, to claim that it's more important to have Joseph Martinez and Miguel Almiron and those sorts of players than Diego Valeri, than to have Zlatan, Rooney, David Villa, Pirlo, those sorts of guys. I understand where they're coming from, and I can relate to it from a pure development and kind of age perspective. But at the same time, guys like David Villa and Zlatan moved the needle in a way that Miguel Almiron never did. Mm-hmm. And that's something that you have to remember.
Absolutely. Next up is Edwin, and he says, I disagree with you guys at times, but you are all on the spot about the Major League Soccer owners scamming the books and hiding money and crying poor. This is my biggest gripe with the league, even though I'm a fan of Major League Soccer. It's something I hope gets corrected in the CBA, giving more to players and adequate compensation per skill level. So some good feedback there from Edwin. Next up is John Average Geek. John says, my takes on the different leagues on television, my observations, the mileage may vary. He says, the Bundesliga, awesome stadium atmosphere. Can't complain with that. The Premier League, just some great coverage by NBC. I think spot on. Serie A, poor in some games. Fans seem the miles away from the pitch. Liga and La Liga, I like the coverage when I got BeIN, but that hurts. I guess that hurts not having BeIN Sports. Do you disagree with any of these observations here, Kartik?
No, I mean, I think there's a couple things. One, Serie A atmospheres are generally poor. There just aren't that many people going to Serie A matches anymore. It shouldn't reflect on how we view the league in terms of quality. I think it's still a very good league. Not still a very good league. I think it's a better league than it was 5 years ago. Now it's not as good a league as it was 15 years ago, when it was the best league in the world. But it had dropped, in my estimation. I would say 5 years ago, a Liga 1 was probably better than Serie A. I know people don't necessarily agree with that. I thought it slipped to the fifth best league in Europe. I'd say it's at worst fourth right now, maybe third. But the atmospheres are terrible there. There's violence at games. There's just a lot of things that are wrong with the league. So the attendances have dropped in Serie A. And there's also the issue of a lot of the stadiums being municipal facilities, much like the era when we had multi-purpose stadiums in the U.S. So that's just a little clarification on that. I agree with everything. Bundesliga, I think, has the best supporters, best fans, fan atmospheres in the sport. There are a lot of good South American atmospheres too, but at least in Europe, Bundesliga is the best as far as I'm concerned. Premier League obviously is the best covered in terms of the way the media covers it. And then I think La Liga, to me, is still probably the best league in the world, technically, but it's tough for a lot of people in this country to appreciate it, because BeIN it's not going to change, right? I mean, I've just had this conversation with someone today. Yeah. The reality is that BeIN is not getting back on those cable systems. So the hope is that as more people cut the cord, they go to services like Fubo or Sling, where you get BeIN. That's really the hope for La Liga at this point.
The strange thing about BeIN Sports, though, too, Kartik, is that you could argue that La Liga and BeIN Sports have more visibility and more accessibility than Serie A. Even though, you mean, Serie A, in a lot of people's minds, I think Serie A people would say, like, yeah, well, the Italian league is bigger than La Liga. But we have no numbers to show for that because ESPN Plus is not sharing any of the data in terms of how many people are actually watching those matches. With La Liga and beIN Sports, we know on the English side how many viewers are watching those games, and sometimes on the Spanish side we'll know those numbers too. But it could be that it's more of a almost like a PR issue, kind of a in terms of beIN Sports, is that the narrative is that, well, the reality is that not being on DirecTV and not being on Comcast hurts beIN Sports big time. But at the same time, I mean, ESPN Plus is not on DirecTV. ESPN Plus is not on Comcast. And so in some ways, I mean, the narrative is, I mean, there's been very little bad press about Serie A in terms of their accessibility and availability of those games. But you could argue that beIN Sports has better access and distribution than La Liga does. But again, we don't know because we don't have those ESPN Plus numbers to compare it against.
Well, that's true, but I think the general impression is La Liga is in a worse place than the Bundesliga or Serie A in terms of visibility in the U.S. because of this. But you might be right. The way you just explained it, I have to think about it, because I was actually going to try and refute your point on that and say, well, Serie A is on ESPN, so and all the matches are on ESPN Plus, and you can get the matches easily. But you're right. I mean, we just went through the numbers for ESPN Plus earlier in this show. In theory, there are more people between the cable systems that carry beIN and the streaming services that carry beIN that subscribe to those. Mm-hmm. So that is a very good point.
Yeah, there's a stigma about it beIN Sports. I mean, you mention beIN Sports to any soccer fan, and they'll say, like, oh, yeah, you mean, yeah, nobody has that channel. Well, the reality is that a lot of people have that channel. It's just not through DirecTV or Comcast. Outside of that, it's pretty much readily available. And of course, ESPN Plus, with that low price point of what, $4.95 a month, it doesn't hurt at that price point. It does make it. I mean, people are not going to complain about that for the most part. Although I do get lots of complaints about it. Anyway, just wanted to throw that out there. It'll be interesting to get the listeners' viewpoints on that one too, in terms of what they think about beIN Sports, and if there is a stigma and really kind of a bad PR about it, where beIN Sports hasn't really addressed that issue that people believe that the league is not available or that channel is not available, the reality that it is, but just have to get that word out there. Last but not least on the listener mailbag, it's from Martin Mulcahy, and Martin says, FS1 showing NASCAR truck racing qualifying instead of one of the world's greatest derbies in Dortmund against Schalke is why I am so happy they lost the Bundesliga to ESPN Plus. Stupid decisions like this puts potential fans off as well. Now, Kartik, you watched this game, right?
But yeah, I watched this game, and actually, I had to run out the door the second it ended. There was no post game coverage because it was on FS2, because I had to get to our stadium by noon to set up for our 7 o'clock game. This is another tough one, because based on what you just said, Chris, I'm now thinking, well, yeah, next year this match will be on ESPN Plus. There's less accessibility to ESPN Plus than to FS2, right? Right. Yes, I would have preferred this match be on FS1 with the studio coverage, Kate Abdo, Alexi Lawless, Ian Joy, whoever else would have been involved, Stu Holden, obviously Costigan calling the match, but I'm not sure. ESPN Plus is going to be an upgrade. I've got a lot of backlash when I said that on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, the day the deal was announced, formally announced. I still stand by that. Look, and this might change my viewing habits. I might watch more Premier League. I said I have a 50-50 ratio watching Premier League to Bundesliga these last two seasons. It might be back to like 80-20 next year, because I have to say, there were a lot of times, and you mentioned the Cardiff-Swansea match, which was a 7 a.m. match on Sunday. I wanted to get up to watch that, but I had my Miami FC game the previous night. By the time I got out of the stadium and press conference and everything, it was 11. So I slept through that match. But there were a lot of times.
Priorities, Kartik. Come on.
Chris, there are a lot of times that at 10 a.m. I've circled the championship match I want to watch, 10 right. a.m. Eastern time.
Yeah.
That is on ESPN+. Plus. When those matches used to be on BN, I would watch them instead of the Bundesliga or Premier League. There are so many times already this season in the first 12, 13 weeks of the championship season where I've circled a 10 o'clock match. I think once or twice I've watched it, but generally I've said, okay, I'm just staying on my TV and I'm going to watch either the Premier League or the Bundesliga. And like I said, it's usually 50-50 ratio, which one I pick. But that is already proven, even though I might have the best of intentions going into the weekend saying, hey, I see Leeds is playing Leeds is playing Cardiff. I want to watch this match. Not watch it because it's on ESPN Plus. So next season, when the Bundesliga is on ESPN Plus, now if it's Schalke Dortmund, yeah, it's I agree, it's one of the best derbies in the world. I probably will watch that. But if it's Eintracht against Mönchengladbach, might be a match for the top four. I might not watch it because of the physical difference for me, who is not a cord cutter yet, to switch to ESPN Plus from my cable system, or to switch off of my what's on my television and go to ESPN Plus. So I'm not convinced by this Bundesliga move yet. I realize I'm in the minority. Actually, I'm not sure I'm in the minority. I'm in the vocal. There's a vocal majority of people who are excited social media about the move away from Fox, which I think is as much as about being anti-Fox as being practical. But I do think there are a lot of Bundesliga fans like myself who are thinking, we get so many matches. We're going to get more matches in a given weekend on Fox networks on television. Then we're going to get the entire season next year. Yeah. On linear television. So, sorry I've gotten all fired up about this, but I'm still not convinced this is the right move for the Bundesliga, and I kind of wish they hadn't made it. But we'll see. Maybe a year from now I'll feel very differently.
It's funny because I've become very attached to certain apps. So I will, for example, I will end up watching more coverage of soccer on Fubo than I will on Sling TV. Now, I have both of those services, but the Fubo app, I watch a lot more games through there. I like the DVR controls. I like the programming guide. I like that you can do the favorites.
Fubo is also awesome on your laptop, by the way, which is why I see a lot of La Liga games that way.
So even though I'm interested in all sorts of different leagues from around the world, I'll gravitate to Fubo. Fubo will be the first place I go to, and I'll watch most of the games through there. And then there's a game that's LAFC against LA Galaxy. It's on ESPN. I do not have Fubo does not have ESPN. So I'm like, okay, let me go ahead and fire up the Sling TV app. And then I have to kind of remember how to work that app. It's not as intuitive or as beautifully designed. So as a result, I actually end up watching less coverage of games on Sling TV and those leagues associated with it, and I see a lot more on Fubo TV, whether it's the Spanish league or if it's the Superliga Argentina or if it's the Premier League or wherever it is. So with the ESPN Plus app and the Disney Plus bundle, if a family is living in that Disney Plus bundle and they're watching all the Disney Plus programming, and they've gotten used to ESPN Plus, and they're watching more of the soccer programming, or whichever app it is, that could be a gateway to actually watching more soccer, more coverage on that because of the app, not because of which league is better or when the game's kicking off or other variables. So it could be that the Bundesliga is onto a big thing here, Kartik. I don't know. I'm with you right now in terms of ESPN talks a lot about reach. So if you talk to anyone from ESPN and you talk about, viewers and average viewers for different games, they will always bring up the topic of reach. Well, we have a bigger reach. We've got SportsCenter, and we've got ESPN FC, we've got ESPN Plus, we've got the website, and they talk about the empire as the reach. They won't go so much into specifics in terms of, well, for example, how many viewers watched a Serie A game on ESPN Plus. We do not know that number. And it's a selling point. That's a selling point to the Bundesliga. The Bundesliga bought into that and said, okay, yeah, we believe in this. Yes, it's nice that you're paying us all this money, but we believe in the reach of ESPN and ESPN Plus, and that's going to make our league better and stronger and into more homes than before. And it's a bet. It's a bet that they're making. And again, too, is that the right bet? We don't know. We'll have to wait and see. All right, Kartik, so if any listeners want to catch up on anything in terms of whether it's politics, Florida history or your thoughts about even soccer or you name it, what's the best place for them to reach you at?
Find me on Twitter at KKFLA737.
All right, and you can find me at World Soccer Talk or at The Gaffer, which I don't use that often, but usually at World Soccer Talk is probably a better place to reach me at there. And you can always reach us via email through web@worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter @worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can always post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com in the comments section, and we'll go ahead and add those to an upcoming show and talk about your comments there if there are standout comments. And Kartik, looking ahead to this weekend in terms of any matches that you're looking forward to, or I think Miami FC is not playing this weekend, right? So
right, we have the championship match the week after, so hopefully I'll be able to watch a little more football this weekend. So we've got a weekend off, thankfully.
All right, well, thank you for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, Spotify, Pandora, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audio Boom, Overcast, and worldsoccertalk.com. If you like the show, share it with your friends on social media. And if you can, we'd greatly appreciate it if you post a review on iTunes. Let us know how we're doing there. We'd thank you for that. And Kartik, heading into another weekend of soccer from around the world, what should they do?
Enjoy your football.